Believe It or Not. The Baker's Broadcast, presented by the makers of Fleischmann's Yeast on behalf of the 30,000 bakers in the United States and Canada, with Ozzie Nelson and his orchestra, Harriet Hilliard, Shirley Lloyd, and, believe it or not, Robert Ripley. That was the explosion that blew up Charles Simonson.
Charles Simonson? Who is he?
Well, Bob Ripley will tell us about him in just a minute.
Jerry Nunez, Rock Knox, Nigasaw, Eromid Lab, Ahip Plenty Hip, Wen Choi, Knox Sob, Nickham Lab, Lackle Spock, Lab Rob.
Now, wait a minute, Ben. I give up. What's this all about?
Well, that's one of Bob Ripley's lives, believe it or not, for tonight. But Bob will be here in a moment to explain it all for you. Right now, let's go with some music. Remarkable reality, believe it or not, Robert Ripley.
Who's everybody?
Oh,
everybody.
Hello, Bob.
Say, Bob, what was that explosion that just went off?
Yes, what's it all about?
Well, one cold December day in 1928, a road gang was blasting rock along the banks of the Wisconsin River. After many hours of fruitless labor because of the frozen ground, one of the men approached Charles Simonson, foreman of the gang, who was standing a little way down.
What you doing, Bill?
Just getting some wood for that fire over there.
Fire? Are you crazy? Get over there and put it out.
But, Simonson...
You crazy fool, listen, there's a ton of dynamite laying around here. You want to blow us all to kingdom come?
Listen, Simonson, we moved all the pot out of the way. I set the boxes myself, I tell you it's safe.
Nothing's safe in this wind. What about those flying spots? If I can put that fire out.
Okay, you're the boss, but I know it's safe. Right there in a box of dynamite within a mile.
Bill, what's that?
Something's wrong. The boys are running like mad.
Look, what's that box over there by the fire? It looks like...
It's dynamite. I thought I moved it all. I thought I...
Oh, I told you this would happen.
It's a box. They're falling on the box. It's catching fire.
Wait.
Come on. Well, let's get out of here.
I'll fix it.
Simonson, what are you going to do?
There's 100 sticks of dynamite in that box. Enough to kill us all. I'm going to kill it.
You're crazy. Save yourself while you got a chance. Simonson, come back.
The dynamite's going off.
Stop him, somebody. Stop him. Don't let him do it. He'll be blown to pieces.
He's pushing up. He's turning his arm.
He hasn't got a chance. Simonson, put it down.
Believe it or not, no one was killed in that explosion. Although 100 sticks of dynamite, enough to blow up a regiment, exploded in Charles Simonson's arms, he is still alive to tell about it. And I want to introduce him right now, the man who lived through that dynamite explosion, Mr. Charles Simonson.
Good evening, everybody.
Gosh, you're certainly lucky to be alive, Mr. Simonson.
What's that? Mr. Simonson's unbelievable experience has left him partially deaf and blind. You know, there's enough power in 100 sticks of dynamite, properly placed, to completely destroy the largest building on Earth. But believe it or not, in Mr. Simonson's case, only one of his bones was broken, a bone in the palm of his hand. Is that right, Mr. Simonson?
That's right, Mr. Ripley.
You know, you've been luckier than most people. Sometimes the most trivial accident causes the most serious results. Charles Hess of Baltimore laughed so hard that he dislocated his jaw. And Charles Balotonopar sneezed and broke his leg. And Bobby Leach, who went over Niagara Falls in a barrel and lived, was killed by slipping on a banana peel in Australia. And when Julia Hopkins of Gary, Indiana, was taking a bath not so long ago, she slipped on a cake of soap and skidded out of the window and fell three stories.
Well, what happened to her, Bob? Was she killed?
Oh, no. Only embarrassed. You see, and Calcus, the Greek philosopher, was told that he would die on a certain day. When the day arrived, he was enjoying such good health that he laughed at the prediction, and he laughed so hard that he caused his own death. But you topped them all, Mr. Simonson. Tell me, what do you remember about that accident?
Only that they found the rim off my cap across the river, 600 feet away.
Gosh, Mr. Simonson, I think you're a brave and a lucky fellow. Are you ever sorry you took that wild chance?
Only when I saved.
Only when you saved? Well, I don't care. How's that?
I still have some sandstone in my face. The room is still racist.
I bet you never asked a barber for a close shave, do you?
Oh, no. I think it's very much. One is enough.
I agree with you. Thank you very much, Mr. Simonson, for coming here tonight. And I hope you'll stay away from dynamite, because, you know, a dynamite explosion like yours has been known to kill people. Believe it or not.
Believe it or not, for tonight.
Then I have two of them for you tonight. In India, there are nearly 300 million Hindus, and every morning they repeat the same prayer. All life is good, and bread is the great mother of all life. And in Ethiopia, then, the Dalit tribe show their respect for bread in a very picturesque way. They build their temples of worship in the shape of large loaves of bread.
Well, Bob, you've certainly shown us that down through the ages and throughout the world, bread has been recognized as the great life-sustaining food. But it's only been recently that scientists have found out why bread is such a wonderful food. One interesting fact is that bread constitutes one of our most important sources of muscle-building protein. We actually get more protein from bread and other wheat products in our diet than from any other class of food. And these proteins from bread are proteins used by the body for building and maintaining muscle tissue. That's why it's so important for children to eat plenty of bread. It replaces a tremendous amount of energy they're always using up. It also helps them to grow big and strong and firm muscles. It's the proteins that make up the supporting walls of a crumb of bread. And it's this lacy-like, porous structure that makes bread light and fluffy and makes bread so easy to digest. So always have plenty of bread on your table. Encourage your family to eat more of it by serving a variety, whole wheat, rye, and raisin, as well as white bread. Make bread a part of every meal you eat.
Now, Ozzie, I would like to present a cab recollect to you.
A cab recollect?
Yes, from Washington.
Now, wait a minute. What's this cab recollect business?
Well, I have a cab recollect right here in the studio tonight, Harriet. Mr. Radley.
Good dinner, as we say in cab recollect.
So you're a cab recollect. Nice talk.
Yes, you're not. I keep this mutinous.
And now, in good old-fashioned English?
I said, well, certainly. I speak cab recollect fluently.
Well, where does a man come from who speaks cab recollect? Why, he's an American. Believe it or not, he was born in Norfolk, Virginia. And he's not an interpreter.
Oh, come on now, Bob. What's the cab?
Mr. Radman lives in Washington, where every language in the world is spoken. And he got tired of hearing all that confusing gibber, so he decided to invent his own language. And cab recollect was the result. Believe it or not, cab recollect is just English spoken backwards. K-C-A-B is B-A-C-K, back. And recollect is R-E-K-L-A-T, which is the T-A-L-K-E-R, talker. In other words, back talker.
Oh, I see.
So do you talk to yourself, Mr. Ryden, or is there someone who can understand you?
I had a friend who could understand me. We talked it for years in front of people, but they never caught on to what we were saying.
Well, Mr. Ryden isn't the only man who does things backwards. You know, in Japan, they beckon to you when they want you to leave, and they wave you away when they want you to come forward. And if they like you very much, they hit you. In Algeria, they shake their heads when they mean yes, and they nod when they mean no. All you need is practice. Isn't that right, Mr. Ryden?
Yes, sir. That's the nothing. Go ahead, yes, you up to.
What did you say?
I said, absolutely, Mr. Nelson. That's all there is to it.
Well, how about Kid Latin? M-K-E-A-S-M-O-A-D-M-I-N-O?
That's yes, but I don't like it as much as talking backwards.
Well, you never make a good try of it. You know, I think Mr. Ryden would have a little trouble over there. You see, the heathen Chinese is peculiar. He's a backward champion of the world. A Chinaman laughs when he's sad, he cries when he's glad, he wears skirts and his wife wears pants, and he puts his vest on over his coat. He takes off his shoes instead of his hat when entering a house. He scratches his foot instead of his head when he's puzzled. He mounts a horse backwards, rows a boat standing up, and shakes hands with himself when he meets a friend. He wears white instead of black when in mourning, likes fractions upside down, and reads the book backwards.
And from what I've heard of the Chinaman's music, I think he sings backwards too, doesn't he, Bob?
Say, that sounds like a challenge there, Ryden. How about it? Can you sing a song?
Sir, what's the Martin Lewis is in Mark Sisson?
What's the Martin? Can that be Mr. Nelson?
That's right. I said if Mr. Nelson will give us some music.
Well, the music doesn't have to go backwards, does it? The Rats and Madman, Madman?
Oh, no, just the words.
would you like to sing?
Oh?
What would you like to sing?
What is only sure that I'm most?
What's that?
Show me the way to go home.
Okay.
What is only sure that I'm most? Mit der Knorr at Ag Abdeb. Adas A.L. Kirkhead Wabalawa Adas Nasi Ilag Sir at Yinde. Uras Reve Azen Mayor. We vote now Rath East Rath Mayo. Or let your last rest and business perhaps not. Wahas and Miss Yard are the most.
Thank you very much. That was Mr. Paul Ryden singing, Show Me the Way to Go Home, Backwards. Or I should say, Wahas and Miss Yard are the most. He's a Rick J. Rose song.
And that was Mr. Ripley saying, Believe it or not, believe it or not.
I've got those. What would you do if you had a word instead of singing a couple of songs? Isn't it funny? It always looks funny on the other side of the street. Everything you do is tough while the other guy's got his feet. I've got those. Get hot, get and smile, but hey, now you don't think you must be making me. I've got those. You never sing my favorite number. Don't you ever play a rumba blues. You'll understand if my hair turns to gray, or they have to take me away. I've got those. Oh, what an easy job you got. All you do is wave a stick.
Hey, Ozzy, come on over here and meet some pals of mine. We get a real guy. Hey, you don't want it. Just a bum sport. Maybe he ain't good enough for you.
Well, you can walk in the
sky. Well, I've never had a mistake.
Well, yes, you can bring yourself in Cupcake, Arizona.
But I've never been to Cupcake, Arizona.
Young man, are you calling me a liar?
Hey, see there, Officer Pillow. Don't you play something pretend? Pretend like sitting on the skis or something?
Hello, Ozzy.
Hello.
What are you saying over me for? You don't know me. Say something hot.
Yeah, I got a friend who's written a marvelous song.
You don't look like a picture.
Hey, Oz, can you get the cover charges taken off? What an easy racket you've got.
damned if my hair turns to gray. And they'll have to take me away. I've got those old and easy jobs you got for you, dear brave and sister.
Here he is again, Robert
Whitley. Okay, Bob. Well, you've all been reading about the $27 million collection of paintings that Andrew Mellon has given to the government. Well, the masterpiece of this collection is the Madonna of Alba, for which Mr. Mellon paid $1,156,000. Now, mind you, it is for one single painting. But Raphael, the artist who painted it, only received $1 a day, or a total of $50, for this work. Mr. Mellon paid over $500,000 for another painting, The Annunciation, for which the artist, Van Eyck, received only $2. He paid $200,000 for Durer's Painting of a Young Man, for which the artist received only a dozen oysters for dinner one night. However, if you judge by the size, the most expensive painting of all was a miniature by Holbein, only 1 inch square, that it sold for $25,000. Raphael painted his most famous Madonna on a barrel head in payment for a 25-cent restaurant bill. And this same painting, Madonna's Appear, is now valued at more than $1 million. But aside from the money value of great works of art, there are many strange stories behind the actual work itself. For instance, the well-known picture of Washington crossing the Delaware was painted by a German living on the bank of the River Rhine. If Washington had tried to use boats of this type, so heavily loaded on the Delaware, he would have drowned his entire army. And this same picture shows the American flag, which, believe it or not, was not created until a year after Washington had made this famous crossing. And this evening, I would like to present a radio sketch about one of the most remarkable pictures ever made, a portrait of the great English writer Henry Fielding, painted by his famous friend, William Hogarth. Let us roll back the years to 1765, when Dick's Coffee House in London was the gathering place for all the celebrities of the day. Here, late one evening, in a corner stall, sat two men listening intensely to a discussion about a circus.
I beg to differ with you, Benjamin. Henry Fielding, God rest his soul, will go down in history as a great dramatist. And in contrast, he wrote some of his greatest lines.
Well, David, I know you were a great friend of Fielding's, but you must admit he was a better novelist than a playwright.
I doubt it.
Well, perhaps you are right. Hogarth used to say the same thing, if you respect your opinion of the painter.
Yes, Hogarth was in my mind. Oftentimes, while he was alive, he'd confide to me that Fielding was more of a genius than the pen than Hogarth himself than the brush.
Yes, Hogarth's picture of Fielding proved that.
The picture, gentlemen. There's something very strange about that picture of Fielding.
Yeah? What is it, David?
Gentlemen, you believe in ghosts?
Ghosts? Why?
Let me tell you about that picture Hogarth drew of Fielding. It was about 11 years ago, 1754, I believe, when I went round to visit Hogarth in his studio. I found him sitting dejectedly before a blank canvas. The sun was about to set, and the rose and glow flooded along.
Hello, David.
Oh, Master Hogarth, why do I find you so downcast? Is the news forsaking you?
Then you haven't heard about Fielding.
Fielding? He's in Portugal, are you not?
Yes, in Portugal forever.
What do you mean?
Fielding died 4 weeks ago.
Fielding did?
Yes, I just received the news today. A genius has passed from our midst, David.
Yes, Fielding.
And in all the years I knew him, I never once drew his picture.
But surely you asked him to sit for you?
No, never. He was always about. Right here in this room 100 times a day, and I never asked him to pose for me. I never dreamed that someday he'd be gone forever.
The loss is not yours alone, Hogarth. The whole world is lost, too.
Oh, I only had one picture, just one picture.
Oh, God, don't take it so hard. These days, please, don't try to control me.
I'd rather be left alone.
As you wish, my friend,
I'll go.
Yes, come in.
Mr. Hogarth, sir.
Oh, yes, and you?
What is it? A gentleman to see you,
sir. Who is he?
He would give no name. I'm Mr. Hogarth.
Yes?
He holds his cloak before his face in the strangest manner.
I see.
Well, have him come up.
Yes, sir. Oh, here he is now, Mr. Hogarth.
All right, isn't he? Here we go.
Thank you, sir.
Can I be of any service to you, sir?
No, Hogarth. I have come to be of service to you.
Who are you? Why didn't you just take this cupboard?
I did not wish to stop you with too sudden an appearance. William, I have come back.
You?
Yes. I am William Fielding.
But I thought you were dead.
I am dead.
Yes. Why did you come back to haunt me?
I do not come to haunt you, my friend. I have come to pose for the picture you want.
No. You have come to pose for me?
Yes.
But how? How can this be?
There are things I cannot reveal to you, William. Be satisfied. I am here. Then you are really a ghost.
Call me what you will.
I can't believe my eyes.
Come, William. I've only been living a few hours. So prepare to draw me
at once.
Yes, yes. Yes, I'll draw you. Oh, this is a miracle. Here. Sit in this chair under the skylight. That's good. Now, face to the right, the little bird. Let your cloak fall back on your shoulders.
Hogarth worked feverishly for 2 hours to finish the picture we all know so well.
Come now, David. That story is preposterous.
Of course. David, you made the whole thing up.
Gentlemen,
I give you my word, it's the truth. If Hogarth were alive today, he'd back me up.
Unfortunately, he is dead.
But I don't need Hogarth to prove it.
Really?
Yes. I know the story is true because I, David Garrick, played the part of Fielding's ghost myself.
David Garrick, one of the greatest actors the world has ever known, was such an amazing performer that he posed as Fielding's ghost, and the famous painter Hogarth really thought he was drawing his dead friend. The picture that Hogarth made at this time is still in existence.